Okay, takes us to 132 then, and as I said, we could go into all the details of the lecture, but you got the main idea, and it's just thought anyway. Now, I think where it comes back to being symbolically important again, if I pick up there on 132 where it says 146, in spite of the lively calls from the audience that I should speak further, I closed the window and was alone with the lady. She said, I think you've fathered a child on me. So that child would be that point of view that he just expressed. It must become a legitimate child. See, suggesting that what he has said is illegitimate. And I would take that to mean that as long as it's theory, it's illegitimate. And for it to become legitimate, you have to experience it. And do you have your passport? No. Why? Because he has not accepted what his task is. And therefore, he doesn't have his identity. Next paragraph, he talks more about systematic change, and I think that's more of the same gobbledygook, but probably the key phrase there is he says it is getting warm. So he is admitting that he's feeling something, but he's not willing to build the bridge between what he's feeling and his meaning. Now, page 133. Again, I think just to try to extract the main point out of the first couple of paragraphs. He is talking about the relationship between numbers and tones. Which would mean that he can begin to grasp, so to say, to see the numbers in the tones would be to grasp the meaning of his feelings. The structure in his feelings would be the message they are trying to convey to him about his work. Again, notice how warm it is a little farther down. And yet still a little farther down, but if we could develop, see where I am there, but if we could develop the ability to perceive these configurations of the moment and to handle them, then we would understand better now in nature the fluctuations, better how in nature the fluctuations of chance come and go in such a way that they bring about a meaning or purpose. Now, there again, I think we'd have to interpret that. What he needs to do is understand the meaning of how his feelings are coming and going. But he does research into the possible systematic dimension of apparently chance in evolution. In that case, the captain would say the right word at the right moment, and so would the master.
And I mean, when that happens, then the captain and the master would be in one point.
They would be in sync, that'd be one way to put it, or that the person would have said, or that the captain would have said, master, heal my daughter. Same, two different images, the same meaning. Right.
And Catherine would lose his manipulation aspect.
Right. Right. And then the girl you told me about could marry. He then says it's about Von Franz, if you remember his interpretation, which is on page 149. Marie-Louise von Franz was also raised under the influence of Vienna. She never lived in Vienna, but her father came from this city. And during the First World War was a high officer in the Austrian army of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Blah, blah. I don't think that's about von Franz at all. I think it's just about him being open to her. And if he's open to her, then she can marry. Not marry literally, but come into a committed relationship with him. Just a detail. But I didn't like the way he tried to put that on her. He says that she too has something to learn, etc. And I just don't see it. What else was she supposed to do? That's a detail. Because remember the earlier dream where von Franz was to marry and the old son, and he I forget the exact circumstance. It was something I wanted to check this morning. I just didn't get to it. Something happened around that time. He had bolted again or something, and then she had the dream of he had the dream of her not being able to marry. So I'm pretty sure it's about his effect on her. It's not about her. Detail. But this is a pause. I said we wanted to get back to Kathy's work on the music. Do you want to, this might be a place to...
Okay, very basic, and what I tried to do was kind of just build a lot of people who may know music. I guess I wanted to try to clarify some of the musical terms. I'm not a music theorist person. I mean, music is more emotional, so I'll try to do the best I can. In the beginning, we begin with the piano, and it's not just an ordinary piano, it's a grand piano. And so I thought, in a way, it's meant to be a symbol for the cell that maybe he knows. The grand piano is a concert form of the piano, which maybe suggests that the piano is nothing more than a music instrument. I don't know why we're considering a piano. But the frame and strings are placed horizontally, and I think that's doing as well compared with the upright piano where everything is vertical. The piano was invented in the early 18th century in Italy by Bartolomeo Cristofori. And the range of the early pianoforte was the same as the contemporary harpsichord, which is about 1.5 octaves. An octave is 8 notes of a scale. So for example, a C major scale would contain the notes D, E, F, G, A, B, and C. During the Mozart era, from 1790 to 1860, the piano underwent extraordinary change, leading eventually to the development of the modern piano, which has a range of 7 1/3 octaves and 88 keys, sometimes less, depending on the piano. The grand piano has longer strings and a longer soundboard, and these are the primary features which contribute to its higher quality tone. And in the reading, he mentioned playing tone, and that comes from the Latin tonus, which literally means stretching. It is a sound of definite pitch and duration, and pitch is the frequency of the tone, which is measurement of how fast molecules are vibrated. This is a measure of cycles per second, so if you were to hum little C, the oscilloscope, which I'm going to would measure 256 hertz.
Each tone of pitch has a specific measurable frequency, which we call a note. On a piano keyboard, each white piece corresponds to one of seven main notes, A, C, G, and C major scale. The black and white keys form a pattern, as you can see from the handout. The black keys are arranged in groups of twos and threes, and the white in threes and fours. The black keys are a form of what are called accidental, meaning sharps, flats, and naturals. The black notes take their names from the white notes. The black notes to the right of a white note is a flat with tiring pitch and is identified as a sharp, and to the left of a white note you will find one lower in pitch than a flat. A natural then returns a sharper flat to its original state. Middle C is located approximately on the keyboard, and it could be so that it centers or orients the piano to the keyboard, much like a captain orients the ship. Middle C is positioned between the two stays on the ground staff, which is listed in this handout. You find two stays on the ground staff, each with five horizontal lines on which note symbols are placed to indicate pitch and rhythm. The musical staff can be the level of the graph with pitch with respect to time. The treble clef at the top of the stays on the ground staff is used for notes positioned above middle C, is used for high notes and notes at the higher frequency. And the bass clef located at the bottom is used for notes at lower frequencies. In music, he talks about major and minor in the writing. These can describe a scale, a key, a quarter, and an interval. A major scale is comprised of seven notes, eight of three, and three of the octave. The simplest major scale is C major. It is unique in that it's the only major scale not to use sharps or flats on the musical staff, and consequently uses only the white notes on the piano keyboard. I was just going to try a C major scale, maybe that. About this. The adjective major and minor, no? In music, the adjective major and minor can describe a scale, a key, a chord, or an interval. A major scale is comprised of seven notes, eight of three, and three notes off the back, if there's more than that. And the simplest one is the major scale, and it's unique in that it only uses the white keys, so there are no sharps in that. So here's an example of C major scale. This is an appendix. In a major key, it can be described as jubilant, triumphant, celebratory, and joyful. And I thought I'd play a little bit of an example of a piece in a major scale, and this is improvisation on Chopin. Played as an A by the author, and I'm going to listen to all of it. It starts out with minor, and then goes to major. Are sometimes to be more interesting, solemn, philosophically introspective, and sad. And here's an example of a C minor melodic. Is
What is non-working duration mean?
Oh, it's just the way she says it.
Oh, okay.
Minor scales come in three varieties, natural, harmonic, and melodic. It's too complex to go into it, but it's a perfect key. And then I wanted to play an example of a piece of music in a minor key, and this will be Mozart's Adagio for piano in B minor. An interval is the space between two pitches, in a chord tone, a scale tone, or a melodic tone. There are two types of intervals, whole and half, and these are sometimes called steps. So I thought we'd do our little exercise here, because this was the hardest one for me to figure out how to teach. So you have eight stones, and if you will take two of the same color and put it on one and eight on the other, piece of paper mark interval, and then fill in with the others. No, I don't understand. Okay, so now if we're going to move down here with ascending C major scale, so you can see the difference in the intervals between major and minor. So if you'll move these down, so we find that E and F are the third and fourth place to be together, and then the seventh and eighth. And what you have there is a whole step between C and D, and between D and E is another whole step, but between E and F will be a half step, and that's why they're touching them. Whole step for A, and then D and C are half step apart. And then in the minor scale, we can move down again. And you'll see that what changes is the placement of the half step. So between C and D is a whole step, between D and E flat is a half, and then whole between E flat and F, G, A. A to B is a whole step, and then B to C is a half step. The first note is called the tonic, so that would be in the first place. And ascending minor scale, that would be C, is the tonic, which is the primary note of the scale. And then the seventh place is always called the leading pitch, because it wants to resolve a major music to the eighth, which in our example for the C minor scale would be from D to C. A whole step equals two halves. Just leave this here for a moment, because when you get chords, it's going to play around for a little bit more. Music is a combination of tones, rhythms, and the underlying harmonic structures. The melody fits within this harmonic structure, is dependent on it, and in some cases actually dictates the harmonic structure. This structure is defined by a series of chords. An chord is a group of notes played simultaneously rather than sequentially like a melody. Although there are many permutations and words to talk about, suffice to say that a chord is nothing more than a single note played single note plays together, but not always, I'm sorry, together, typically, but not always separated by thirds, so by third steps. For example, a C major chord would contain the notes C, E, and G, which is the first chord mentioned in the piano lesson. Notes can be arranged as a series of major and minor thirds called triads. So using our stones now, we could remove the second stone, the fourth, the sixth, seventh, and eighth, and we would have a chord, which would be C, E, E flat, and G. A triad is a chord of three notes consisting of a root, which would be C in this case, the tonic, the third step, and the fifth step above it. There are four kinds of triads: major, minor, augmented, and diminished. The first two are consonants, and the second two are dissonants. And consonants is a combination of sounds that are harmonic and pleasing to the ear. A more poetic synonym would be concord, which would be the arrangement of the heart. Dissonance, then, would be its opposite. And you'll notice a lot of the chords that we played last time in the piano were from a dissonant chord. The Western ear has a preference for consonants. In music from India and in the Orient, they have a more open ear and they can tolerate a lot more dissonance than we can. The Western ear always wants music to be resolved. We just go there. We feel it coming and we expect it to move to resolution and resolve. Many of the chords played are dissonant in the piano lesson, and when I was working with my teacher, she felt that they were all resolved to F major chord, which I thought was really fascinating since she was supposed to work with one song. You can always resolve every chord in there to an F major chord. Well, it could probably resolve to some others, but that was the one that she came up with. The last thing he talks about is a sonata, that he could not play a sonata, he could only play simple tones. A sonata is from the Latin and Italian sonare, which means sound. In music, it means a piece played as opposed to sung, which would be cantata, cantare. It is a wordless musical composition that began in the Baroque era, where it was originally scored for violin, cello, and a keyboard, usually a harpsichord, to fill in the harmony. The classical sonata is set in three movements. The first one introduces the theme, the second one develops that, and then the third is a resolution. This is Mozart's piano sonata in F major. I just wanted to say a few words about Bach, because he did say that he played Bach in order to keep things orderly. Shut down really fascinating. Johann Sebastian Bach is considered the wizard of chord progression and counterpoint. Bach's later compositions were really anything but orderly. And I thought perhaps you mentioned this, I don't know why, but this came to me while I was reading it. Bach was fully supported by the church. And funded by the church. So I didn't know if that was maybe going back to his Christian ethics by playing Bach. So, anyway, that was just a thought I had. Bach was also the king of counterpoint. And music, counterpoint is a relationship between two or more voices that are independent in contour and rhythm and interdependent in harmony. It comes from the Latin quintus, contra quintum, which means note against note. It focuses on melodic interaction rather than harmonic effects. And musicologist John Rand quoted it so beautifully, I want to read his quote. It is hard to write a beautiful song. It is harder to write several individually beautiful songs that, when sung simultaneously, sound as a more beautiful polyphonic whole. The internal structure that creates each of the voices separately must contribute to the emergent structure of the symphony, which in turn must reinforce and comment on the structure of the individual voices. The way that is accomplished in detail is promising. I'm going to say an example in a minute, but I wanted to talk about chord progression. It's also called chord sequence or harmonic progression or sequence. As its name implies, it's a series of chords played in order. Chord progressions are central to most of modern European influenced music. And generally, successive chords in a chord progression share some notes, which provide harmonic and linear voicing continuity to a passage, and Bach is the master of this. He just intuitively knew which chords shared notes, and he would play with that. And so he could take it out as far as he could go, and then he would bring it back into some kind of resolution. And this is what modern jazz does as well. Anyway, this is an example. This is Goldberg's variation, Bach Goldberg variation number 3, played by Glenn Gould. And what you'll hear is he'll give you the voices a little bit at a time and then bring them all together. And then you'll hear Mr. Gould come along with the playing. Sometimes he's doing it. I'm just going to end by saying whether you agree with Shakespeare that music is the food of love, or George Bernard Shaw's description of music as the brandy of the damned. That was interesting. Music has an emotional component best described by Nietzsche, who said, through music, passions enjoy themselves.
What was it? The
who?
Nietzsche said, through music, the passions enjoy themselves.
Wow.
And that's the thing that Powell could be saying.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very well done. I hope it was helpful. I tried to make it simple. It was very hard.
It's hard, yeah.
Music is so... This could be a whole life study.
You know, my sister fell in love with Bach in sixth grade, and she ended up in PhD in mathematics.
Oh, really?
Oh. Mathematical. I think she had that mathematical thing in her mind. But nobody knows.
The music is math.
Uh-huh.
You should see if you're
You don't want them there?
No. I'm intrigued with that whole resolution, how Western ears have to have
yeah.
a resolution. I wonder if you research Western music and what was appealing to people if you could even go, I wonder if it started with Descartes. That whole resolution. I'm curious about that.
And is that hereditary or is that cultural?
Yeah.
I wonder if you took somebody raised, a Westerner raised in India, and brought him here, mm-hmm. whether they would have a Western ear or an Eastern ear. I've always wondered about that. But if you were a Westerner born and raised in India, not living in a compound, but living. Whether it's hereditary or whether it's culturally in.
I think it's cultural.
I think
it's cultural. Of course, you go to China and their music is very different too.
Yeah.
Well, did any of you guys see the prosperity from that sitcom or whatever? But just a real small clip where this Indian guy was saying, he was making it up. He goes, I made millions on these little jingles I made. And he was doing these crazy noises. Like, it just didn't resonate with us at all. But it was Indian. It was clearly Indian. And it was hysterical because it was just like, oh, it sounds terrible.
Jung talks about that dissonance, doesn't he, in music? And he equates it to the split in the psyche and
to our.
It's expressing our confusion and.
That we need to have resolution, you mean? Huh?
He talks about it in conjunction with modern art. Do you remember that part? Mm-hmm. He says that, you know, the dissonance in music, I forget he's referring to jazz and all that, mm-hmm. how it reflects the chaos in the psyche. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You think of Bartok and Mahler, we are, you know, various musicians.
Said the same thing.
Well, they do the same thing.
Oh, they do the same thing.
We're very
disturbed. I don't really understand all that musical terminology. Well, you understand more than I do.
No. Talking
about the resolution here, when you said that, it reminded me of some of the music of the 60s that it just kind of trailed off. You know, it didn't have any final ending, which I thought was kind of interesting, which
and the Beatles, remember, brought the sitar.
That's right.
To their music.
Even some of the modern musical composers like Sondheim, he doesn't resolve. He doesn't resolve the music, it just stops. It's quite interesting because I always wanted to go somewhere else.
For example?
In the music, musical passion, there's a song that just
stops.
It doesn't go anywhere. There's no.
What did he write that I would know? I know I've seen some of his stuff, but I can't remember.
Stephen Sondheim, he did Wright music.
But he's written, you wrote musicals, right?
Yes, he did A Sunday in the Park of George, which was about.
I just saw one. I can't remember what it was.
He's selling it. They're off.
Is that with the idea of the youth infinity?
Well, what happens with the Western ear, there's this phenomenon known as psychoacoustics where we would just fill things in. And so a lot of these chords only have two notes in here, and my teacher said that's because I guess he's assuming we're filling in what's missing. But the Western ear will just fill it in. So we do just fill it in when we're hearing the music. We want it to go to the second ear, and we know it resonates inside it. So it's going to go to the second ear.
Isn't that what happens often with Bach players, Bach composers, interpreters, they interpret between those notes?
Yeah, that first woman I played, she hears it and she just plays it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you again. 1:33, a couple minutes left. Sad news, he's not going to enter the promised land. This large country in the north that where people were reading the newspapers, and he didn't, is his promised land. Remember the earlier dream where he was in a building and was on fire, and he ran down the stairs. He got into a cab driven by the stranger, and the stranger was going to take him to the north.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's, you know, it's biblical imagery. the image of the goal of his development, which was to understand and to articulate the spirit and matter unity. Live it personally and challenge science to address it as well. At 134, but the lady responded, "That is also good." I don't believe that's the lady at all. So that's these blatantly false statements. I was inclined to critique the other thing she said about yeah, what it was we were talking about, where I said that I doubted what she was saying.
You think that's from consciousness, or that is really the animal?
Well, I think that's what he's hearing this woman say, but I don't think that's the voice of the genuine feminine.
I suppose if we're looking at it as an active imagination that isn't really, but it's mostly from consciousness, could you say that?
Yeah, you could say that. Same.
Maybe it's his
statement. Active fantasy, yeah. As the title.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the one, and the girl you told me about could marry. Is that the one you think was?
No, top 134. The lady says that that is also good.
Well, I thought one.
Oh, the earlier one. Where?
On page 133, and the girl you told me about could marry.
No.
That's not. That one's okay.
No, that's awful. I can't remember what I just said.
Play back for
you. Oh, well. Anyway, here again, at least, she is not to be trusted, I don't think. She's saying, don't worry about completing your goal. And yet the whole point of this piano lesson was for him to reach his goal. It just doesn't make sense.
Because that last chord is a resolution, right?
The very last one in the piano lesson.
It doesn't
resolve.
I thought it did, but when Janet played it, she said, no, it doesn't resolve. It needs to be resolved after the major chord.
So you all talked about the all the chords and things like that. So I won't.
Good, because we won't answer you.
I missed that.
Yeah, you're a bad boy.
Can I ask one simple question?
Maybe.
Did y'all make sense out of it?
Yes, complete sense. Okay. Yes. No, we struggled over it. And part of the problem is that the text is actually wrong. What I did at the piano lesson, that's not my translation. I took that from a magazine article. And Kathy raised the question, are these all right? These notes right? And I have a handwritten version of the, I have a copy of the handwritten version, like check, and there are typos.
Oh.
So all of the chords aren't right. We corrected them as we went along, but unfortunately you weren't here.
Did Paul, was he pretty again?
He must have been, yeah. He must have been. Enough, you know, to sit down and...
I was just telling him that I find that myself, when I find that somebody's taking a tap and learning the piano, my respect for them goes up a level by that alone. Mm. So, whatever that means.
Okay.
That's just my little thing.
We all have a little thing. Our time is, just look at the clock, our time is up. Well, that takes us to 1:34, and I think we will say that we have done with the very first paragraph, and we'll pick up then 1:34, the second paragraph next time. And we don't have too much to go here, so I think if you read, I don't think we'll get through more than the next chapter.
Are we going to go through this again? That's 142. Is that what you mean? That's where they are just explaining the piano.
Yeah.
So we're going to go over that again.
Right. Yeah, we will. Let me see. Wait a minute. Oh, no, we're not. No.
What do we not go
Well, we had finished in the text at page 134.
Yeah.
And I would say that we had finished in the commentary on 153.
Were there any...
Hang on. Let me get clear with everybody.
So 152 on is more commentary on... No, that starts out new text, right? It's not a commentary on the piano lesson, is it?
Yes.
It is?
Okay. So, see, the piano lesson ends at page 1.
Oh, I see it.
39. The commentary starts on page 140, but we've been shuttling back and forth between the text and the commentary. So we have effectively covered the commentary through page 150. Wait a minute. No, not that far. What am I talking about? How far are we going? Yes, we have. We've got. See, we've done 149. We've done 150.
I only have notes up to 141.
But I was commenting on the text, but and I'm always going back to the commentary. But we've covered the commentary, even though I haven't referred to it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm just trying to see where we are in the commentary.
Well, Von Franz could marry with page 149.
Yeah.
Does that tell you anything?
Yeah.
Was it the end of our statements here today?
I think we've gone through 150. And what I was just saying here is things he has not talked about. So we will... make some more comments. I'll make some more comments, but then we will pick up with the commentary on 152. So we've essentially covered the last chapter ending on page 151. And we'll start with the commentary on 152.
So we should read up to page 152.
Yeah, read up to 162. Right. I know it's been confusing, but... I didn't know how else to do it other than to shuttle back and forth.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.